The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth, seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Today I'm going to talk about gateways into the path of liberation. And obviously liberation from suffering, that dissatisfaction or dis-ease, the existence of which the Buddha taught in his First Noble Truth. And another way of putting it, as Reverend Master Jiyu, whose memorial we celebrated today, as she often put it, doorways into oneness with the eternal, or oneness with the unborn, the undying, uncreated. Our true nature, or reality, with a capital R. And it doesn't matter which way up you look at it, there just is the great matter for which we train. And it doesn't matter what you call it and which way you approach it, but that training is very accessible to each of us, much more than we usually think it is. I think we often feel we have to know an awful lot, and we have to study for years before we can do it properly. It seems that we often think that to find freedom from suffering, peace of heart, oneness with our Buddha nature, that it's very far away from us. And in actual fact, it may be helpful to identify some of the ways that we commonly and quickly can enter into Buddhist training. And if we've been doing it for some time, how we can help ourselves deepen our training, because there are very immediate, accessible gateways into the path. And since we've just celebrated our monthly memorial in honor of Reverend Master Jiyu, our beloved late master, on this Sunday, I'd like to also quote from some of her teachings, in particular from Roar of the Tigress, Volume 2, which Reverend Master Daisui put together, commentaries of Reverend Master's commentaries on Great Master Dogen's teachings. And as Reverend Master Daisui says in the introduction to this book, he chose passages where she particularly sort of took off and into her own understanding, her own teaching. And it was more than just a commentary. So I highly recommend this book if you'd like to get to know Reverend Master Jiyu better. We have copies of it up in the guest house. There are many gateways. There are some that are more commonly used. And so I'd like to look first at one that is one of my favorites and I have used most of my life of training. And that is the simple one of bringing our minds and bodies to the present moment, to the present. Of course, this is an essential element of our meditation practice and something also that we can do at any time of the day or night in any posture. And so it's very accessible. You don't have to know a lot. You don't have to be have any particular attributes. Just being a human being with an ordinary mind, there it is, accessible to us. So let's look at a passage that I find very inspiring in this regard from Reverend Master Jiyu's teaching. This one is from the chapter entitled The Great Ocean of Meditation. And she says, there is actually no time in pure meditation, for meditation is ever-present. Existence is time itself. Existence just is. And there is just a constant present. What else is time in its real form but a constant present? You need to understand how to go beyond the opposites of time and space before you can enter the great ocean of meditation. But you do not understand the flow of Uji completely until you find that great ocean. You only have a relative understanding of time until then. You cannot help but think of a past and a future. This is why to dwell in the eternal present and not to dwell in the past and not to worry about the future is one of the biggest and most important doors into Zen training. We waste years thinking to ourselves, in quotes, oh, how awful it was when this happened or that happened, or what my third grade teacher did, we've got a long list of those. I have my own list, believe me, and they do pop up. But she says, this is all to dwell in past time. Or we worry about what is going to happen in the future. If I take this job, what will happen? What will take place? And again, we've got our list of worries about the future. Could be everything. What am I going to eat? What, you know, how am I going to keep myself healthy? How am I going to take care of my children, etc.? Well, she says, in case of the job, well, if you take the job, such and such may take place, or it may not. You only have to live in the now. If you can learn to live in the now and not worry about the past and future, you have found one of the best gateways into Zen training and one of the most frequently used. So that's, I think, very encouraging. And this was probably one of the reasons that I was able to get into Zen training, because I found it was something that I could do immediately, and have continued to find, despite various faults and mistakes I've made over the years, that coming back to this is always a way of entering into the path. And in fact, through that, have found that I've never really left the path in my heart. So I highly recommend it. Well, let's look at the practical aspects of it. So we have this practice of just this continual, it's a gentle turning towards that which is right now. Where we are now, what we're doing or not doing now, our attitude of mind in the present, our physical posture. Are we with ourselves? Are we with what we're doing? With those around us? With the tools or things that we're using? And actually within the environment that we live in? Are we actually here? And we can ask ourselves these questions. We can check ourselves with that. I often think of it as being present truly in my own life. I remember when I realized that most of my life I haven't actually been present in my own life. It's kind of a shocking realization, isn't it? And I was, you know, a fairly distractible person. I saw myself as coming, when I came into training, as being in quite a thick fog. But then I began to talk to others and I realized it wasn't an uncommon experience. And as soon as we start meditating and sit and face a wall, we realize how challenging it is to actually be in the present. Nonetheless, very doable. So it can be shocking when we first start the practice, and even after doing it for some time, to realize how much we're off somewhere else. We all know about that. And the world, of course, is very good at getting better even at finding ways of distracting us from the present. And we're experts at it, you know, and we develop whole worlds and technologies in order to do this, don't we? And I'm making fun of it, not to say that technologies and all these things can be useful, but at the same time, we seem to make industries out of distraction, you know? And it's something for a meditator to really be aware of, because we have choices, way more choices than we think, as to what we do with our attention and what we do with our lives. And we very often, I think, all of this that's going on causes us to suffer from this idea that we're missing something. I remember my parents once talking to me about a friend of theirs who wrote them a letter. They hadn't seen this friend for a while. They were involved in some sort of political group together. And the friend said to them, I've been suffering from FMS. And I said, what's FMS? You know. And they said, fear of missing something. I thought that was a good one. You know, how we all have a little bit of that. And I think our society kind of gets in there and causes this sort of a dis-ease, doesn't it? You know, I'm okay, but there must be something else. So I recommend this practice because, in fact, my experience is that in the present, your whole life is right here. You can't actually live in the past in reality, and you can't actually live in the future in reality. You know, if you try it, it doesn't really work. If there is something from the past that needs to be dealt with, it'll come up in the present. And if you need to do some planning or, you know, need to know something about the future, you have to do that in the present as well. And it's very, very grounding. And all the teachings of the Buddha will come to you out of that training. I know in my own experience, especially when I've lived alone or been in retreat, noticing how thoughts and feelings and impulses can pull us away from where we are. And, you know, we can be very immersed in memory. Of course, we know, you know, post-traumatic stress is like that. You're going over and over the same thing that happened. And it's a condition that needs to be treated. I think this particular practice is immensely helpful for that sort of thing. And everybody, with the kind of karma that we've all inherited, has some post-traumatic stress or maybe post-karmic stress, you know. We all have some of this, and so our minds throw up thoughts about the past, and of course that creates fears about the future. So it's helpful to notice this, and also to notice what happens when you do bring your mind to the present. If you do it repeatedly, these things will start to not have such a hold on you. Some things are very powerful. Some things were really hard and really rough. They'll keep coming up. But in time, you'll also learn to use those as a teaching. Those will become actually a teaching for you. They will know. But, you know, I don't say that lightly, because there are some really horrendous things that happen to us that do take time to heal. But we can actually make use of everything. But I began to personally, and you've all had some experience of this, it was a real eye-opener for me to see how much I believed in and identified with my thoughts and feelings, you know. And this is even after many years of training, just how strong that is. And it's not that they aren't real, they do exist, but, you know, do they actually have any ultimate substance? I began to realize they really are very fleeting. So that simple practice of returning to now, letting go of the past, not fearing the future, looking at and doing what's right in front of us, allows us to gradually enter into and live what I've experienced and what I feel is as our true life, the life of Buddha. And that's the reality, you know. And we begin to experience the difference after a time. We don't want to create opposites about that, but nonetheless, we begin to experience that as our true life. Our view changes. We begin to notice things we haven't noticed before. Thoughts, feelings that may have caused us to really have perhaps created worlds, in a sense, begin to lose their grip. We begin to not be in their clutches and begin to just see them for what they are. We begin to see how we can move forward and not be enslaved by them. As the most excellent Mira Samadhi scripture says that we chant in the morning sometimes, there's that lovely passage in there that I love, very poetic. I tend to be, you know, lean towards that. The wooden figure sings and the stone maiden dances, you know. And that's such a helpful thing to remind oneself of. How often do we really notice what's going on around us? I remember going to a park in Vancouver, BC when I lived up there. It was Chinese cultural center, and they had this lovely park, and they had all these amazing rocks and ponds and so on. And the rocks, they're lava formations that have lots of concave bowls and, you know, holes in them and so on. And I would spend some time there because it was on my way to work, and so I'd have my lunch there. And as I sat with these rocks, I began to see I was a Buddhist then, these Arahant figures in the rocks. So each of these rocks had its own face and its own personality. And I realized, of course, you know, these are Chinese people. They'd know what to do. They were Chinese artists that put it together from China. And they were cheering. They cheered me. Every time I went there, it cheered me. You know, there was one that was crying and one that was just sitting still and the other that was scratching its head and, you know, that sort of thing. And this is obviously not something that we're always looking for, but if you're being present and you're bringing mind to the present, you're no longer so caught up in your thoughts and feelings, you begin to notice the ways that the Buddhas and ancestors and bodhisattvas are helping us all the time. Simple things like that, for example. As one of the monastery's chief cooks, and also as an occasional guest master, I've certainly found this to be a most valuable practice. Many a time, especially in my first couple of years as a chief cook, I remember coming to, you know, half an hour before lunchtime, when everything just seemed completely in chaos, you know, all over the place, and overwhelming chaos, perhaps. And in the practice of just bringing my mind to the present and being still with that, and even as Dogen says, turning one's body towards the Buddha hall, and maybe making gassho, that helps too, somehow within minutes everything would change, and I'm not exaggerating. The landscape would change. Somehow that would shift it to where I would say, oh yeah, that's over there and that's over there and it's all coming together and so-so is just about done with that. And it all starts to come together. And suddenly some space has been created. And it's really very remarkable. So I highly recommend it. And I've just made it not only during working meditation, found it to be helpful at any time, particularly if you're feeling anxious about something, but even if we're feeling very elated about something, because we can easily go off into our own little clouds and suddenly realize we're flat on our faces again and haven't noticed what we're supposed to be doing. So when we're very busy, we can feel like we're at our limit. This is just impossible. Can't take any more. Just try being very still with that, bringing your mind to the present, being still. And just see what happens. You know, just trust it. It's quite remarkable. I have found another wonderful aspect of it is, just at that point when I feel I'm at my limit, if I'm still in the present, somehow it opens me to a generous response, which is one of the important trainings of a chief cook, and perhaps of all of us, of course. It can seem impossible, you know. I'm so crabby today, there's no way I'm going to be able to receive all of this stuff, you know. You might be trying to get a meal out and the phone is ringing and someone needs something, or someone with a donation has turned up and you want to be there for them, and you're also trying to give some instruction about the meal, you know, three or four things. And I'm sure you have this in your own work happening at once, if not a dozen things happening at once. And one can feel one is really just at one's limit. But again, by bringing the mind to the now, what matters here? Ah, there's our donor. We receive the offering. We can express gratitude. Ah, I don't have to be crabby with my assistant. I can be generous. I can be sympathetic to their whatever misunderstanding. That person who wants something right now, you know, perhaps a generous response is helpful, even if it's just, could we talk about this after the meal or something like that? But it can, you know, it's quite remarkable. Sometimes we do get crabby. Obviously, we're human. But again, there it does give forth to these paramitas that we're, as Buddhists, supposed to be practicing. So after practicing this way for a time, I began to feel that actually it's not just a now, like a fixed now that, you know, we're at, right? There's more of a sense of entering into a flow of meditation, a flow of eternal nows, where this now doesn't stand against any other now, and also it's not dependent on any other moments of now. Very interesting. So there's no need to hang on to anything, nor to reject anything, to push anything away. And it allows one to step forward with confidence and faith And again, this trusting of one's true life with a capital L, which actually neither that true life, the life of Buddha, neither arises nor passes away in actual fact. And thereby the path of liberation opens. It's nothing dramatic necessarily, just being now, just doing what needs to be done, ordinary daily life activities, but without fear or worry, having us in their grip. And if there is fear or worry or doubt, it doesn't have to cripple us. We can go beyond the limits of it. I would never have guessed that, it's not so much about being perfect or doing things that are remarkable. It's more just going beyond one's stubbornness, one's clinging, one's inadequacy, one's pride, one's anger, all these things. One can actually truly transcend them, truly convert them, truly not be enslaved by them. There's always a way forward. We have a lovely Vaisak invocation that says, yes, yes, there is a way. I always think of that. There is a way. There is a way. And this is something that Reverend Master Jiyu, of course, taught us with a vengeance, There always was a way to do training. There always was a way to keep the precepts. There always was a way to do what really had to be done. And it just means trusting the practice. So as we do this, we begin to see what we've been holding on to that's been causing suffering. It'll just naturally arise. We see how in my experience, we've created whole worlds by believing in certain thoughts and feelings that we thought were real. And it's such a relief to let go of that. And again, it creates a huge space. We live in the world as if in the sky, it says in the scriptures, just as the lotus blossom is not wetted by the water that surrounds it. So we begin to see that great sky, begin to not worry about the water and the mud, and trust that we can be nourished by it. And we begin to realize the truths that the Buddha taught, the truths of anicca, that all these elements that make us, of what we think we are, of what we are made of, the skandhas, and what we think of ourselves, all these things are impermanent and ever-changing. We begin to realize the truth of anatta, that there really is no ultimate substance to these elements or these skandhas, no self that is separate from the unborn, the undying, no self to uphold, that we have to create, that we have to get rid of. And we see the truth of law of karma, that there are consequences of our actions and deliberate thoughts. And we see how we do harm, how we might have done harm, how we might be doing harm, and that we have choices, way more choices than we thought we had, actually. And we continue to experience more choices opening up even as we go on. Choices to act wholesomely. Choices to live in harmony with the Buddhist precepts. Again, really in harmony with our true lives and the true life of all beings. That life that we all actually share together. We know that all beings are connected, that we're all interconnected, but we often wonder how we can actually access that understanding fully. It's one thing to know it in our heads, it's another thing to know it fully in one's heart and to experience it. And again, this is one way into that, is to just be present with what is there and notice. How am I treating these plants? How am I treating these animals? How am I treating my family, my friends, my fellow monks, my fellow trainees? How am I treating myself? And so on. So the whole path opens up through this gateway, all the teachings of the Buddha. And there are other gateways, of course. Reverend Master Jiyu used to talk about the fact that her primary gateway was the teaching of preceptual truth. Teaching of the precepts was her way in, and that was a great catalyst, teaching on the precepts for her great awakening as she went into deeper levels of spiritual awakening, as she describes in her book, How to Grow a Lotus Blossom. There, another common pathway, another common gateway, I should say, is that of going beyond opposites. When we notice ourselves getting caught, for example, a funny story that someone told me once was, I won't use any ethnic references here, but the mother gave a son a gift of a couple of ties, right? And the son puts one on, and he says, "Well, it's really nice, Mom, thanks a lot." And she says, "What's wrong with the other one?" Yeah. And I thought, that's a classic, you know. That's what our minds do so often. You know, it's like, okay, if this is good, then the other thing must be bad or wrong, you know. Or if my heart tells me something is good, and someone else their heart tells them something different is good, we somehow think that one of them must be right and the other must be wrong. That's one of the ways it can come up. It comes up in myriads of ways. And it's very helpful to just to notice the mind doing that. When we do, we can just let go of the whole thing and step beyond it, step beyond the opposites. Again, another aspect of our meditation practice. And there are a lot of funny stories about that particular one. But I'm not going to go into those other gateways too much. I'd like to again quote something on the teaching of Uji from Reverend Master Jiu, one of my favorite chapters of hers. I still feel in my head I don't fully understand it, but somehow when I read it, it's sort of like taking in really good nourishment. So it's definitely one of my favorite chapters of Dogen, and also Reverend Master's commentary on it being one of my favorites. So going back to our practice of bringing the mind to the present and the understanding of time, perhaps. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'll read this one passage. She says, Reverend Master Jiu, "In short, there is no reality aside from this flow. Furthermore, because this present moment is, for the time being, that is, it is eternally passing away, even as we speak, all of reality, the small r, is always passing away." And this is not a problem. That's my insertion. And this means that, just as the Buddha taught, impermanence is a basic property of our universe. I'm sure you know that lovely piece from the Diamond Scripture. "Thus shall you think of all this fleeting world. A star at dawn, a bubble in a stream, a flash of lightning in a summer cloud, a flickering lamp, a phantom, and a dream." Everything is passing away, but to know the unborn is to know the flow within us. You cannot hold it in your hand. Just as when you put your hand in a river, you can feel the water running through your hand, but when you try to take some in your hand, there's no water there. What Dogen calls the whole of time and existence, what I call the unborn, is therefore the fullness of emptiness. And believe me, it is the fullest emptiness you will ever find. If you keep your hand in the river and do not try to grasp it, it flows through your fingers and you know it intimately. This is to know the unborn, to see it in all things, to know that what is around you, which you define in terms of space and time, is unreal, to know the real, with a capital R, within impermanence. This is to know Uji. And I think in order to understand Uji better, I'm going to suggest you read this chapter. It's the first chapter in this book, volume 2. It's not separate from impermanence. And as we find this, we also find that the law of impermanence is also pure compassion. It's just pure compassion. We often have this sense of dread about the teaching of impermanence, don't we? But in fact, as we really allow ourselves to experience it and sit still within it, within the present, within this eternal now, we begin to experience the incredible universal compassion that actually is that law, something we tend to miss. So keep going with that practice. So this just being one of the great gateways. In talking with some monks, I realized that in some ways there are as many gateways into the path of liberation, if you like, as there are human beings or trainees. And yet there are some classic ones. And I bring this up because it is so accessible at any time, any place, anywhere, anyhow. So there you go. That's our little talk for today. And I'd like to just end with this last part of our offertory that we sang today in memory of Reverend Master Jiu, which is one of my favorites. We pray that when we are in delusion, the jewels of enlightenment shall shine of themselves, and that when we are in enlightenment, the circle of Japonica shall be high in the blue sky. In other words, we can't lose. Let us walk on the way to enlightenment with all living things.